All right, and welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Kyle Hester. Today we'll be talking about one of my favorite topics of all time. Anybody who listens to the show knows that, and that is horror films, or I don't know. Kyle, would you call what you do horror films? You know, I watched two of them. They're two real important that I want to get at here, but I watched two of them, and I watched the preview to Preacher 6. So I watched Zombie with the Shotgun, and I watched The Chair. They both appear to, you know, for the uneducated, would both fall into the horror category. But do you consider what you're doing here horror? Because The Chair almost was more like a She-Wolf of the SS kind of exploitation film, and then Zombie with the Shotgun was a little more action adventure-y mixed in there.
Yeah. You know what? I think that because neither of them were my project, like I'm not the creator of either of those projects, I came on to them in actually different ways. So The Chair, I was brought on as an actor and ended up producing it here in LA. Like everybody basically likes to pee on a project. Like this is my project now and I'm going to do what I want with it and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so Peter Cimetti, the creator of it, like wasn't having it. So so basically I was like answering his questions when he talked on the phone, and I guess I answered them all well enough for him to ask me to produce it. So that's how that ended up happening. And so yeah, but then Zombie with a Shotgun, I had basically called up my Hilton, who I didn't know at the time, Hilton Ruiz, who's the creator of Zombie with a Shotgun, and I was like, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing with it? This is awesome. So he said, well, I'm talking to some people, you know, about how to make it into a movie. And I've got like some financiers that I'm talking to. And he said it wasn't really working and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I said, well, let's just do it. You know, let's start a fundraiser and let's make it happen. And, then he said, okay. And so that's how that happened. Then we raised the money for that. And yeah, so I've kind of like found my way. So it's like, horror, it just seems to be that those are the kinds of films that independent filmmakers really kind of go for because it's got such a big audience.
Yeah, like everybody else on the planet, I have always dreamed of making films because I am such a horror fan. And I always kind of thought to myself that, like, horror was like making porn but without the baggage. It kind of seems like if you can make one and get it in front of the fans, you can probably afford to make another one. But then you also don't have to explain to your family what kind of movie you make. You know, most of them will just go, oh, watch that, you know, but... You know, so it seems like this perfect market. Also, you know, as a sort of DIY, sort of ex-punk scene kind of guy, I really feel that, you know, struggling artists in the infancy of their starting is really where the best stuff comes from, you know.
Yeah, I agree. It's such a, like, people that just want to make film, you know. I mean, it's so difficult to get a film made that it's like if you can find yourself surrounded by a bunch of people that want to do something cool, you know, and horror, the horror community is like that. Like everyone, like, just like, oh, what's next? What are we doing?
So my other question to really sort of help myself understand, although I think maybe I know, what does a producer do?
Okay, that's a good question, and I'm glad you asked. A producer is basically in charge of everything. So he or she is in charge of who does everything. So it's like if the set sucks, you can blame the producer. If the sound sucks, you can blame the producer. So because they are ultimately the people who decide who those crew members are. So it's like, so that's really like what I did on The Chair was like bring the whole crew together. You know, it had already been cast, so I was in charge of the casting. But so basically helping to like what it looks like, you know, what's in front of the camera ultimately is the responsibility of the creative producer. So it's like the weakest link, you know, all falls on that person's shoulder. So that's why.
Well, I'm sorry to cut you off. So what's the difference, to help the audience understand? What's the difference between the producer and the director? Because I think a lot of people have the impression that the director is the head honcho.
Right. Okay. The director brings the vision of the script, and it's like if the producer is part of the creative process, and then they would collaborate with the director, and the director will put his, you know, flavor on the film of how to tell the story. So the director goes, okay, this is how I want to tell the story. Like, give me this and this. And the producer goes, well, we don't have the money for that. But what about this? So there's that kind of like negotiation between the producer and the director, but the director is the one basically calling the shots, like literally, you know, like how is it going to look?
Yeah. Yeah. So basically the producer is the boss and the money, and the director is sort of the project manager and the spender.
Correct. Yeah. That's absolutely right.
Okay. Okay. So yeah, that's, you know, oftentimes, you know, I'll be talking to people about movies and I'll say, oh, it's produced by so-and-so, and they're all, yeah, but they didn't direct it. And I'm like, yeah, they kind of maybe did, you know, they, being the producer, they might've directed it. You know, they basically had the power to say yes or no to anything. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. And also, it's like on a lot of the, you know, the fundraising stuff like that, like, yeah, people will give away producer credits to people that give money to the film. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you're listening to, you know, if there are any filmmakers out there and you want to do that, be sure that you save the producer credit, like the one that's actually happened for the producer. So, and you give like a funding producer credit to people that pitch into a campaign, just so that like the person that actually does all the work gets the proper credit for what they actually did.
I see. So the producer is not even necessarily somebody who invested money, but no. They're the one who have been entrusted with making sure that something is produced.
An executive producer is basically like a money person who's like, you know, I have 50 grand. Please do awesome things with this 50 grand for this movie. And then they're the executive producer, because ultimately they made the film possible to happen. So the executive producer trusts the people that are the filmmakers, the producer, to make a good movie with their money.
I see. I see. Well, before I bore the audience too much with all my industry questions, which I apologize, I'm sure I'm going to have more of, but why don't we run down Preacher 6, what it's about and where it came from. Basically, let's start out with basically what it's about. I've watched the preview. The preview's online, you know, we'll share it so people can check it out, but why don't you tell us here?
All right, Preacher 6 is basically, it's about a small town preacher comes to the big city and ends up fighting demons in a literal sense. So it's not a religious film for anyone who's wondering. But it's like the hero happens to be a preacher. So right. I think that, cause I get asked that question. So we'll just put that out there. And so basically it's kind of like this preacher ends up in what would be the League of Justice, you know, with other people that in this big city. He meets this team of other people who also fight demons. So you have this introduction into this world of basically crime fighting people and like, you know, netherworld fighters, basically. So, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And there's, right now we're in the middle of special effects land and it's a lot. I took on a big thing, you know, being in for the first film that was like hours from beginning to end.
Right. Right. Yeah, the first thing when I saw the title and watched the preview, I'm just all, did I miss Preacher 1-5? But I figured out.
Yeah, you'll learn what the six is when you got to. Right.
I figured that must be the case. So, do you find that because of course I internet stalked you. Do you find that producing is a necessary evil of acting in an independent film world, or was that something that you enjoy doing now, or when it's thrust in your lap, or you're all great, I have to do this again, when really I just want to show up and do some acting?
You know what? That's another great question. Dude, you have some good questions. That actually was, I started out that way. I would consider myself, in the beginning, I consider myself the reluctant producer. Like, okay, fine, I'll do it. You know, just because I knew I'd done so many things in film that I've like basically worked all the crews. So I knew how a movie got made. And I think that's like the most important thing for a producer to do is to know how a film set works and like to be able to problem solve from any direction, you know, because ultimately you got to make your days and there's a lot of money on the line every day. So it's no stress, but in the beginning it was like, oh man, I just want to act. It's like, okay, fine. Yeah, I'll do it. Let's go. You know, let's make this happen. And but I've found myself kind of enjoying the whole creative process and being able to figure out, okay, like here's the challenge of how are we going to put this in front of the camera? You know, how are we going to make this film look a certain way? And being able to figure that out and work with the director, and which is what I do. I'm pretty hands-on with the directors. But that's not all producers work that way, but that's how I work.
When you're dealing with an independent film, are they all, you know, you hear all this stuff about the Screen Actors Guild and unions and how expensive it is to make a film. Is an independent film bound by those things? Like if I were to just go out and like start filming my neighbors and make a movie out of it, could I not get that done because they had to be unionified? Or I'm sure you get where I'm going with this. I'm not asking it very well.
So regarding union stuff, if you wanted to make a movie, you can just make one. Now, if you got talented people, you know, people that can like run the set and you know, good actors and whatnot, make that movie, you know? So with Preacher Six, basically a lot of the actors, cause I am SAG, a lot of the actors that I knew and that I wanted to use in the film were, you know, they were Screen Actors Guild actors. So there wasn't a way for me to go non-union. Definitely, by all means, you know, I would say the majority of horror films are non-union. And so,
interesting.
And that's just, and that's cool. So, I mean, I'm not like everything has to be union or, you know, everything, you know, I don't have a stake in it. You know, it's like, I'm all about the art. So however you can make the art, then go for it.
So I assume all that union concern is like on a distribution level, and basically in order for these big distributions to have all their bases covered, they need to make sure all that stuff's covered.
No. The union has nothing to do with distribution. Basically, it just has to do with getting actors that you'd want. Like if you want, an actor that you know on a TV show or something like that, most likely they're going to be SAG. So then you'd have to go through SAG in order to get that actor.
I see.
Yeah. But however, there are a lot who do both. So, and that's going FICOR or something like that.
I get it. So it's like scabs and anything else. Once you hit a certain level, the union will possibly refuse to work with you unless you're going through the union in order to secure amounts of money and payments. And so it's just like any other union.
Right. Yeah. Okay. It kind of all depends upon what you're trying to do, you know, with your film and who you're trying to get on it, you know? And if so, because a lot of people that I know are SAG. So I went SAG, you know, which I am. So pretty much, and, that's yeah, that's just what I do, but by no means does that mean that someone cannot do a non-union film and then also get it on to Amazon on the platforms, because there are lots of them, you know, like you go on Amazon Prime and you can see lots of horror films and lots of films that are not union. So yeah, make that movie.
Yeah, I always thought that was something holding people back. You know, as a horror movie fan, I like to consider myself a horror movie historian, self-made, no degree. I started it. I've always often said that like different genres of movie take something different to make them that genre and good. Like there's a great movie that kind of covers everything. It's got a little bit of everything. It's great. It covers all things, you know, no reason why you shouldn't like it. It's like, you know, The Shining. You don't watch The Shining because you think it's a great horror film. You watch The Shining to see what a great horror film is. You know, those are a different tier of movie. But when it comes to genre films, I've always said that like in horror movies, the specific is imagery. And like in science fiction, it tends to be writing and effects. In drama, it tends to be writing and acting, you know. But horror movies specifically, it's imagery. You know, how much of this process goes into how are we going to make people uncomfortable or scared, or how much, I guess the question is, how much do you rely on the script and how much do you rewrite the script to fit what you want it to be once it's given to you?
Wow, that's a great question. You've drawn some lines there that that are interesting for people to try to cross over or not cross over, like whose responsibility is what. And I think that the writer basically tells the first story, you know, so that I think is writers definitely don't get enough credit for what they do. And I think that sometimes directors can take a little bit of leeway with the script, and writers had this, or actors also had this ego thing, which is weird, about the script. You know, it's like, well, once the script hits the, you know, once we're start filming, the script goes out the window, and like all, like not necessarily to that extreme, mm-hmm. but it's like, you know, well, we're in front of camera now, so we're just going to do whatever we want, you know, which to the chagrin of like writers out there listening to my wife wrote Preacher Six. And, so I actually had a little bit of those kind of battles on set with like, okay, what am I, how am I got to get the script that's written, because it's like, this is what is written, you know, this is what the script is. This is the stories right here, you know? So then as a producer, it's like, I'm having to deal with ego of the multitude of opinions, you know? So it's like, there's this dance on set where it's like, you know, you're trying to get a certain thing done for the film, and then you're doing the dance with everyone who has ideas about what's supposed to be done. So that's where it's like, it can be tricky doing that. But so that's all part of the dance though.
Yeah, so, you know, media and the world would have us believe that the set is full of large egos. Is that commonly the case?
So no, actually I don't like working with divas, like men or women. I don't like it. You know, I went to performing arts high school. I went to Cal Arts. I've been acting like forever. So, you know, like all the training and all the stuff that like you would go through, I'm using air quotes, to like become an actor. And like to have that, I can do this because I know how to do that. And I've done Shakespeare, you know, all the things that you would think. And so that when people start believing their own hype, then you become, can I use bad words?
Sure.
Okay. When people start believing their own hype, then that is when you become an asshole.
Right.
And so, and I don't work with them. So it's like, if I know that certain a person is a certain way, then it's not worth it for me, because I know that like once you're when you're filming, you're on set with these people, like many hours a day. You're like living with these people for a certain amount of time, you know. So you want everybody to be cool and everybody to be friendly and just roll with it. And we're all working here for the same thing and you know, all that kind of stuff. But so yeah, so when someone, and I've seen those kinds of egos on sets, like when just working as an actor and going like, wow, I'm never going to be like that, you know, and I'm not, and I don't know what it is, you know. It's like, maybe it's just like, it's people are just kind of who they are. And if you're a jerk, then you're just going to be a jerk. And when you get more notoriety or, you know, if people know who you are more because, you know, you did this TV show or whatever, then all of a sudden, you know, that means something in your brain that that really doesn't mean what you think it means.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah, if you're producing, you can just find someone who's also a good actor and not a jerk. So
absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, that's pretty much what I try to do. And that's so along my acting career, like Peter Murnick, who was in Justified, and you know him from JAG. He's in Preacher Six, and we met on the set of Andersonville, which was directed by John Frankenheimer. This is back in the 90s, so that's when I first met Peter Murnick, and also Carmen Argenziano, who played one of the leads as well. He is no longer with us, but he was amazing. So I met both of those gentlemen on the set of Andersonville, and it's like, and I was thinking back then, I had no idea that I would be, you know, producing movies at any point, you know, but I was like, wow, if I ever had the opportunity to work with these actors again, those two people, I would want to, you know. So then we all happened to be living in LA, and I was like, here's my shot, you know, and I called them up, and of course they're like, hell yeah, let's go. When do we start? You know? And it's like, so that's the kind of energy that you want. So I've just kind of built that mental Rolodex of actors that I would want to work with again.
And I assume there's a changing attitude there, because one of my questions I have here is, has streaming created a better or worse independent movie environment? And I would assume that as costs of movies come down, these diva relics are slowly starting to find themselves without opportunity. But I don't know, has streaming really created a better or worse environment for independent films?
Well, I think what it has done is it's there's this kind of like, how are people going to make a living doing this? You know, so what's the balance? And like, part of the distribution chain is trying to figure this out too, you know. And I think that when it could, now you have plenty of opportunities, you know, to get your stuff out there. You know, so how do you do that and make money and pay your investors back and keep making movies? So that is the big, without having like millions of dollars in advertising. And that's where the big budget stuff really, you know, has the upper hand, because they can buy these, you know, posters and billboards in cities and, you know, all over the country and all over the world. And that's millions of dollars to get the word out about your film. So it's like, and I think that's what people forget about when they start, is like, you know, they put all this energy into making a movie and then go, oh, right, it's on Amazon now. And Amazon is this, you know, huge platform where your movie is on Amazon. So very good. Very good. That's awesome. Right. You know, yeah. So how do you let people know that your movie is on Amazon? You know, right. And that's what people forget. And it's like, I don't know why no one's watching it. You know, because it's like,
no one knows it exists.
Right. Yeah, yeah. How are they going to find out that it exists? So all these things, and like, you know, with any of those streaming platforms, it's like, it's all algorithms, whether it's YouTube or Amazon or whatnot. It's like, you got to have a certain amount of views for it to even show up in the algorithms, for it to be on, you know, on the front page of the horror page on Amazon. You know, when you're just scrolling through films, you know, and you're like, oh, I want to see that. And you see like Spit on My Grave and, you know, all this stuff that is like all the famous things, because people are already familiar with it. So it keeps regenerating for those movies to be on that front screen.
Oh, God, it pisses me off, frankly.
Yeah.
Movies I've already seen. I wish I could check off a movie that maybe I hadn't watched on Amazon, but just don't show me it again because I've already seen it. Can I add it to my watch list somehow that I've already seen this one?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But I think that becomes the challenge is like getting, you know, beating the algorithm or, you know, building your audience. So like as a producer or as an actor or a director, it's like you, especially with all the streaming stuff, you want to be continually building your audience now. And that's also part of building my audience, you know? So it's like, you got to roll with all this new stuff and instead of going, I'm not going to do that, you know?
Right. Yeah. My day job is building websites and doing SEO. And while that's not an algorithm I ever looked into, you know, a common occurrence I have is building a website for a company and they're just all, okay, now it's not going to go live until we're ready. And I'm just like, what do you think is going to happen? We're going to go live and all of a sudden the floodgates and throngs of people are just going to come piling onto your website and you're not going to be ready. You know, that's not the way this works, you know, but every time they're just all, think I have some sort of like ignition switch that I'm going to switch and all of a sudden we're there, you know, and it's never that way, but they always expect it for some reason.
Sounds like a pretty similar set of pressures.
It does.
Online, yeah. You know, streaming film to if you're selling anything else online, it sounds like It's kind of the same situation.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Kyle Hester. We're talking about his upcoming movie, Preacher 6, in which he acts and produces, which if you don't know the difference between acting and directing, well, you can rewind.
Listen to the first part of the show.
Right. Yeah. You know, when we went to break here, we were talking a little bit about the marketing of a movie in these environments. And, you know, as a person who's producing and acting, you know, I have a hard time you know, with my day job, everybody's just all, well, why don't you do something wonderful and let the entire world know about it? And I'm just all, man, when my creative juices are going, I'm like all out drawing, writing, making music, going crazy. And then my marketing juices, I'm doing the same, but I cannot put the two together. There is no way as soon as it's like social media, I'm just all, do people want to see my avocado toast? I don't know. You know, it's like, do you find that it's difficult to separate the artist and the marketer or the producer when acting? So when you're in front of the camera, are there times that you go, oh, that's just not going to fly or something? And the director's maybe, hey, that's cool. Or, you know, do you make a separation there?
Yeah, that's hard. It's very difficult. It's one of the most challenging parts of doing it because you're wearing so many hats at all the same time. I think that the critical part is like hiring people that you trust to take care of their jobs. Mm-hmm. Because it's like the more people that you have, that can take care of their own situation, then the less stressed out I am. And, which is weird because it's like, it puts the producers especially when you're acting and producing, it's like, you're in the position where you're worried about everything and, doing a good performance, you know, and it's super challenging, especially when, you're having issues, you know, it's like if there's anything going on set that you have to handle and like putting on the producer hat, you know, that's, which can take the focus out of like what you have to do as an actor, you know, which happened a couple of times. Thankfully it wasn't a lot, but there were some moments on, that I had to kind of deal with some personality issues and whatnot, on Preacher 6 that I wasn't expecting, you know, to have to
to deal with. So, but yeah, it's super challenging. It definitely.
Yeah. I can imagine that, you know, I don't know, when I'm being too businessy, I just feel like my art is unfulfilled. And when I'm being too artsy, the business just ain't getting done. You know, that seems to be the problem I'm having.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Good luck.
All right. Well, maybe that's the talent, you know, if people are out there listening and you have the ability to create on schedule and you know, turn it off and on, well, then you probably have what it takes.
Okay. So here's, I'll give you a small story for like Preacher Six. So in the first couple of days, so, all right. I had gone to Arkansas and shot the beginning of the film the year prior to the summer prior to when we shot the rest of the movie here in LA. And so it was just Grady and Grady Earls is the director. And so it was just he and I and, you know, a couple of crew members and some actors. So it was like a smaller scale, and he was doing, you know, he was running camera, you know, and he had an assistant and whatnot, but basically he was like doing his thing, you know, with handheld and whatnot. And we were just like cranking out days, you know, we're like, okay, we need this, let's go. We need that, let's go. You know, and then we get to LA and we had a lot more people. So there was a lot more, first of all, it was a lot more, artistically intensive. There was more stuff that had to happen. And we were finding that we were getting behind on our days, and we only had 12 days scheduled. And you're basically talking like $1,000 a day just for the stage rental. So it's not like you can go, oh, well, we'll just shoot more next week, because it's like there is no money next week. So you got to get it all, you know? So we were like, you know, a couple of days, and we're finding out, oh man, we're running a little bit behind. So like, so Grady and I go off, and we had this like talk, and I said, all right, man, we gotta go. We gotta run and gun just like we did in Arkansas, or we're not gonna get this movie done. Oh, and it was like that kind of thing where it's like all of a sudden, all right, it's game on, you know. And so that's kind of like what we started to do, and so it shifted from what kind of shots can we do? What kind of big setups can we do? Can we do big setups? So it's like, okay, you get one. So I'm talking to the DP. We get one, like, you know, pick your magic shot that you want this to happen. And then we're going handheld and sticks, you know, for the rest of the day. And that's had to get the movie made. You know, it's like, you know, big budget films. It's like they'll spend, you know, all day, you know, just on this one little tiny bit of a scene, you know, and that's not an option.
I heard they end up getting something like 45 seconds of usable film a day on big budget films.
Probably. Yeah. That sounds about right. Yeah. We were doing 10 pages a day.
Right. So when you're making a film like this, and of course you're constrained by the budget, which big budget films are too, constrained by the budget. You know, I mean, just look at the history of any Stanley Kubrick film, and there's like a good couple of chapters about how it went over budget by millions, you know. And is there any practicality to filming not in a chronological order, other than, of course, filming in a non-chronological order makes sense by set and by stage, but within that set and stage, you're here, okay, we got 2 days at this set and stage, let's do the big budget expensive stuff first so that we can kind of phone in the other stuff if we have to. Is that the way these things go?
You just answered all those questions with your question. So that is absolutely how that all goes. Like if you go, okay, you know, we're in the living room today. So everyone, you know, and in the film, you know, you would have however many, you know, scenes in the living room. So then you gotta like schedule all your living room shots for that moment, because we can't come back to the set. Like we gotta like burn this set afterwards, you know, we're done. So, right. So you got to shoot all the living room scenes at that time. So yeah, it's that's why you would be shooting out of order, is because of location or sets or actor availability. And that becomes like a big dance in itself, which becomes the first AD's responsibility is scheduling. And you got to have a good first AD to be able to get your days because of all those reasons.
And the AD, I assume, is the assistant director.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's right.
And it's their job to basically make sure that everything's scheduled and then no scenes are lost, because it would suck to get to the editing room and find out that you didn't film a 10-second clip that you needed.
Yeah, yeah. The first AD, it's basically, the first AD is like a set general. Like, he is like in it. They're not, they don't necessarily need to be anybody's friend. They're not there to make friends. They're there to get the day. So it's like, if you're not doing your job, they're going to hear about it. And like, what basically their job is like, okay, what gets us the next shot? What gets us going? You know, and that's their job all day long, to keep everything moving.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's kind of like my high school. It's like the principal was like the face of the school that was there for all the events. But if you were in trouble, you were going to the vice principal.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Before we get too close to the end, I got to ask, was Roddy Piper nice to work with?
Roddy Piper was the nicest guy that you would ever want to meet. Yeah, he was super, super cool. He talked to everybody like, you know, like your long lost friends, and, you know, looked everybody in the eye and just like gave people time, like, you know, treat you like you're a person. And he was super, super cool.
Yeah, yeah. Kara here probably doesn't know who he is. He was a professional wrestler. He's
the movie buff, so.
Right, right. I was never a fan of professional wrestling, but I am a fan of John Carpenter. So as a side note, I am a huge fan of Roddy Piper, of course, because he was in They Live. But yeah, so when I saw him in there, I'm just like, yes, this is all. And he was a sick bastard in that movie. It was nice to see him and pleasantly caught me off guard. That's
right. Oh yeah. I think that Roddy Piper's performance in The Chair, I think, was maybe one of his best performances. I think he really knocked it out of the park. And yeah, he was not a nice person in that film.
Right. Okay. So how important is defining a genre when making a film? So, you know, I realize that here we're talking about independent horror exploitation a little bit for these two movies that we watched. Your new one might be a little more action, but still have some horror elements. But there are quite a few independent comedies out there and dramas going on. How important it is to define a genre when making a film? Like, is it a marketing attitude that says, like, if we don't define the genre, we can't market this thing? Or
I would say it's very important. How it comes down to, how can you sell your film on a thumbnail?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's it. So it needs to be super clear on what it is that you're trying to do. You know, just like with an image, you know, like, because that's how you kind of got to think now. You know, it's like when you're scrolling through Amazon Prime or whatever, you know, streaming service, and then you're looking at thumbnails. If you've never heard of this film, then what is it that, you know, that's going to stop? So I think that it's, in this time, it's really super important, unless you don't care. And you just want to, like, you know, get some awards and, you know, put it and get it in film festivals and get some awards for a film. So there's that kind of thing, you know, which builds your, you know, queue, as it were, in that way. But it's complicated. But yeah, try to narrow it down as much as you can.
Yeah, crazy. So what would your suggestion to somebody who wants to get started in any of this stuff? Let's go with acting. Somebody who wants to be an actor, they're already grown up. How do they go about getting involved with somebody like you? And I don't mean your phone number. I just mean, how do they get involved with somebody like you? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, no, I got you. Get yourself on film, you know, whether that's making a monologue or going to an acting class and getting some people together and doing some scenes and whatnot. But get yourself on film that is going to be something that is going to represent what you can do. You know, because that's ultimately what's going to grab people's attention. Like I actually, I went and made it this, you can see it on my YouTube page. It's Book of Faces. It's like a 40-second video that I went out in the backyard and I was just goofing around, you know, and I did this kind of like Shakespearean, you know, whatever. And I sent that clip to a casting director on Facebook who was casting a Book of Daniel at the time. And that clip got me the audition for the film. So the moral of that story is have something that you can show people, because anyone can say, yeah, I can act. You know, you put me in your movie, you know, and that's great, you know, but like, so if you've never met somebody, you have to have something to show them, you know? So that would be my suggestion.
So it's not as much nepotism and who you know as people might think. There is a big factor of hard work and effort and getting you there.
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, it's like, I think that one of
it's
the
like
things,
anything else.
Yeah. Like anything else. And I definitely did not know, you know, I had nobody, you know, there was no nepotism, you know, for me. So everything that I got was, you know, because of those, making those things happen, you know, getting on, having an acting reel and doing scenes and being in acting classes and getting in front of directors that way and kind of stuff. It's like doing the work that you have to do. If nobody, it's like, you've got to get people to give a shit about who you are. So how do you do that? And so that becomes anyone's question, and you have to answer that for yourself. So it's like, so if you're not in a big city and you don't have acting classes, then go get a camera and do some monologues and work on some lighting and put something out there that's going to help you get to the goal.
Yeah, well, I definitely understand that. You know, Karen and I, we've been doing this show for like 3 years. And, you know, I stopped playing in bands when my kids were born. I didn't really have the time. I had to, you know, work, be a parent. And so I found it really difficult to find any group art form where anybody was involved. And then Karen and I started doing the show and it started working out. And I'm like, hey, that's great. And then we end up having somebody on who does audio dramas, and he has me do a soundtrack for one of his things. And then all of a sudden now I'm producing audio dramas and stuff. So it was really just a matter of putting myself out there into other spectrums. And I wish I had learned that younger, you know, I wish I had, learn that younger. So anybody listening, you know, just put yourself out there. What do you, how far from the bottom do you have to fall, you know?
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's like I never would have been a producer if I hadn't done all the stuff that I did, you know. It's like working art department and doing grip work and being a PA and, you know, all that stuff that you do, you know, that's the reason I was able to produce The Chair. So yeah, just keep going.
Yeah, I agree it, and I totally appreciate it. It's something that I like to hear. I find it inspiring. So you know, before we get to the end here, I want to make sure that we recap on what you got coming out new. Of course, you know, Zombie with the Shotgun and The Chair are both available on Amazon, but this new one that's coming out, when will that be out?
I'm not totally positive. The coronavirus has thrown, you know, part of
our course, right,
into a little bit of a whack, but we're, you know, we're going to keep on going, and you know, we're going to come out with that on DVD first, and then the first streaming platform will be rental on Vimeo. So everyone get your Vimeo account ready if you don't already have one.
Oh yeah, rental on Vimeo. I forgot about that aspect. Actually, I should look into that more, because, of course, obviously, I like the independent horror films, and that's probably a great place to find them.
Yeah, and also, you know, for producers, I think that one of the things that you know, you got to try to figure out a way to make the money back so you can keep doing it. You know, and I think that people, what they'll do now is just throw something up on Amazon Prime and then not make any money at all. You know, it's like pennies, you know, for the free thing, 10 cents, you know, for that rental of or the free watch of a movie. So it's yeah. And then if that producer has no followers and doesn't have any stars in the film, then you will not make any money from that movie and you're giving it away. So, I'll just put that out there.
Yeah, that's the hard part. And if people want to find out more about you, sign up for mailing list, find out where to go as these things happen. Where do they go to find that out?
You can follow me on Twitter. I'm on Twitter all the time, and it's at Kyle D. Hester. And if you want to help out to get some future movies made, I do have a Patreon, which is like the price of a cup of coffee. Patreon. It's Kyle Hester, actor guy. And so however we got to get it done, you know, this independent film is one of the most important things that we need to keep alive, and especially during these times.
Yeah, I agree, because everybody needs something new to watch.
Word.
All right. Well, if ever you need yourself some zombie fodder, Karen and I are available. And you've been listening to Kyle Hester here on Radio Wasteland. We've been talking about his new movie, Preacher 6. You want to find out more? Check out Kyle Hester on Twitter. Just search that up. I'm sure you'll find it. Or do what I did. Search for Preacher 6 on the internet, and you'll find that as well. You're listening to Radio Wasteland. Come to the